Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hello and welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. Appreciate the opportunity to get together with you once again. And looking forward to our conversation today. Today, there are a billion or so people celebrating a new year, something that you and I probably haven't been paying much attention to, but we're going to find out about that and more as we talk China today, get an update. This is the Chinese New Year, and to tell us a little bit about that, we brought in Brent Fulton. Brent is the co-founder and president of China Source and the editor of China Source Quarterly. We've talked with Brent in the past and so appreciate his understanding of what's going on in China, particularly the church in China. In fact, he has written a new book called China's Urban Christians, A Light That Cannot Be Hidden. We'll delve into that in a little bit as well. He's co-author of China's Next Generation, New China, New Church, New World. He served as the managing director of the Institute for Chinese Studies at Wheaton College some years ago, and also as founding U.S. Director of China Ministries International in the 80s, and has been writing and reflecting on what's going on in China for a number of years. He and his wife live in Hong Kong, and we're glad to have Brent back with us today. Brent, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Well, thank you, Neil, and Happy New Year.
Well, thank you. There's a billion people celebrating something, and we're not really aware, I guess. Well, maybe first, what is the Chinese New Year? And I think it's more than one day, is that right?
Yeah, well, they follow the lunar calendar, so it's the Lunar New Year, and it usually comes in late January, early February. And I guess the best parallel would be kind of like our Thanksgiving. It's a huge event for people in China. It's the one time of the year traditionally when they'd actually get some time off. And so many people are going home for the New Year, and travel is just an amazing mess in China around this time of year. Most people get several days off. Some places even get off as much as a week or 10 days. And so it's really an important time to go home and see family.
And when we talk, going home, there is, and we're going to get to that a little more, but there's a huge migration, right? So there's a pretty extensive, when people are traveling, they're going maybe long distances, right?
Yes, that's really added to the complexity of it in the last couple of decades, as you've got millions of people going into the cities to work. And Chinese New Year for them is usually the only time over the whole year that they're going to be able to go back to the countryside and see family. And so you have a lot of people in the train stations, bus stations, you name it. And then, of course, the weather doesn't always cooperate. And so you get snowstorms and people stranded for days on end, and it all becomes a rather dramatic time.
Well, there is some drama in the country of China, and I know it's a big country, and so a lot of different maybe conflicting elements going on at the one time. But let's talk maybe some in general terms. We've heard a lot about China's economic concerns lately. Obviously, when they struggle, it has impact around the globe. Give us maybe your reflection on what's happening economically today.
Well, China for years has been sort of the world's factory floor. They've been manufacturing anything you can think of, and they've been exporting it all over the world. And now they're trying to make a transition from an export-led economy to more of a consumer economy, which means moving people sort of up the value chain from manufacturing jobs into more service-oriented jobs, and manufacturing things not to send out of China, but for people in China to buy. That's a difficult transition to make, and China's right in the middle of that, and the economy is slowing as China does less manufacturing and tries to move people into this consumer economy. And China's leaders are understandably concerned about unemployment and about the general slowdown in the economy.
Now, I think, and we've talked in the past, I mean, in general, right, the Chinese are industrious, hardworking, capable people, right? So should we be concerned maybe, globally that, that China won't sort of turn itself around?
Well, it's a hard one because so much of the effort and the investment has gone into export-oriented manufacturing. And to suddenly develop a consumer economy is difficult. Particularly people in China have quite an ethic of saving. And so when you're trying to get people to spend more money, that in a way goes against the culture that's been developed over the years. And I think because of a lot of the upheaval that's happened in China in past decades, people want to save to make sure that they have, you know, kind of a cushion. They don't know what's going to happen next. And so developing the consumer economy is not necessarily easy.
Is the idea of a consumer economy coming out of a change politically? I mean, China, it seems like, maybe has gone back and forth between being maybe more open to being restrictive. Let's talk about where China maybe is at this point in terms of political leadership.
Well, the political leadership, I think, consistently has wanted to raise the standard of living for the people of China. And so beginning with the reform era in the early 80s, it meant getting more people to work and building up the manufacturing sector so that more people would have jobs. They certainly did that, and they certainly lifted hundreds of millions of people out of poverty in the process. Now they're saying, well, we want a better standard of living, and so we need to kind of move up the chain and get people into better jobs and allow people to have houses and have better education and develop the cities, develop the countryside so that it's more livable. And so it's just all part of an ongoing desire to improve the standard of living for the people of China. I think that's been pretty consistent. I think what's changed politically is since President Xi Jinping came to power about 3 years ago, the government has been much more concerned about its own legitimacy and its own survival, and as a result has really been clamping down on public expression and groups that the government might perceive as being a threat. Now, the economic transition goes along with this, because as the economy transitions and as the economy slows, there is more people out of work, and the government is very concerned about labor unrest. There have been an increasing number of incidents of people striking or protesting because of labor issues. And the government, frankly, is quite worried during this time that it might lose control of part of the society as a result of that.
Well, I was interested if there are any parallels to maybe what happened in the Arab Spring. Young population have access to social media and the internet. So has Chinese government, I mean, I think they've probably been a little more restrictive anyway on access to some of the things. But is there a youth movement that's pushing for a change, and is social media playing a part of that?
Well, there would be if they didn't control it so tightly. And they control the social media in two ways. One is what's often called the Great Firewall of China. It basically keeps content from outside China from coming in, content that they don't like. For example, New York Times and other media sources that they don't want people to access. The second way they deal with it is on the social media inside China. There is a large army of people who are tasked with going online and engaging in discussions with people and then turning those discussions in a direction that's favorable to the party. And they're often called the 50 cent gang, because supposedly they're paid 50 cents per post to do this. But the government has engaged probably hundreds of thousands of people just to get on the internet and do that. And then, of course, if people are posting things on chat rooms or on their Twitter equivalent in China that the government doesn't like, they can just pull them off. And so a lot of posts will go up addressing particular social issues that people are concerned about. And within an hour or so, they just disappear from the internet. They're not there anymore.
So is the 50 Cent gang having an impact? I mean, does that change some views, do you think?
I think for some people it does definitely sway the conversation. It certainly lets people know what the government is expecting and kind of where the lines are. But at the same time, there has arisen amazing creativity on the internet in terms of how to get around the 50 Cent gang, so to speak. People using kind of code words, acronyms, other things, to say things that otherwise would not be allowed to be said. And then the government is trying to keep one step ahead of these people by either answering those posts or deleting those posts. So there's kind of an ongoing contest online for public opinion.
We're going to continue our conversation as we talk about the changes in China, particularly China's urban Christians. There's been a massive migration to the urban centers of China, and the church has, in the midst of responding in some powerful ways. We'll learn more about that. Brent Fulton is co-founder and president of China Source and the editor of China Source Quarterly, and he's just written a new book called China's Urban Christians, A Light That Cannot Be Hidden. We're talking to Brent today on New Year's, Chinese New Year's Day, and we're part of the celebration, so getting a perspective on China. And there's more to come here on Connecting Faith. Listening to Connecting Faith. Today we're talking about China, and we're talking a little bit about some of the economics and the politics and the social influence, the culture of China. But we're going to focus our attention on the church here in a few minutes. And to give us some analysis is Brent Fulton. Brent is co-founder and president of China Source and the editor of China Source Quarterly. He has been a China watcher for a number of years, served as director of the Institute for Chinese Studies at Wheaton College some years ago, and before that as founding U.S. Director of China Ministries International. He has co-written a book called China's New Generation, or China's Next Generation, New China, New Church, New World, and the latest is called China's Urban Christians, A Light That Cannot Be Hidden. Brent, we've talked a little bit about kind of some of the creative ways that young people are using social media. I'm wondering if we talk maybe about just some of the social trends taking place in China. Maybe first talk about the one-child policy. It was, last October or so, we learned that China was going to end that. Talk about the implications of that.
Well, the one-child policy really came into effect when Deng Xiaoping, China's reform leader back in the late 70s, realized that China's population growth was going to create a huge economic problem in his view, and therefore sought to limit the population. Well, they've done such a good job of that now the working age population in China is plateauing. And meanwhile, you've got this huge elderly population that's just burgeoning, and China's leaders are looking at that and saying, we're not going to have enough people working to be able to support all these older people that are coming down the road. And so they've decided to allow people to have more than one child, to have two children per family, in order to try to increase the working age population.
Is that a significant change, do you think, in terms of, I mean, obviously it's like pragmatism is driving a lot of maybe the decisions that get made in China.
That's certainly what's driving it. It's an economic decision. Most people think it's too little too late. You can't just suddenly increase the working age population overnight. Yeah. It's going to be a couple of decades before this new boom of childbirth results in more people in the workforce. Secondly, a lot of urban families are saying, we really don't want a second child. It's going to be too expensive.
Well, you mentioned urban families. The fact is that the millions have moved to the urban areas, right? I mean, I think as we maybe talked the previous time, this is one of the greatest migrations in world history. Say more about where people are moving and why.
It is the largest human migration in the history of the world. And when the one-child policy was first implemented, most of China's people were in the countryside, and people in the countryside tended to want to have larger families because you needed more people working on the farm. And back about 3 years ago, China flipped from being predominantly rural to having most of its people in these cities. And so now you have younger families in the cities who really don't want a big family, and it's a lot more expensive to live in the cities. With the urbanization has come a rise in the standard of living and has brought a better life to a lot of people, but it's also created a huge income gap and wealth gap between the countryside and the cities in China.
Would families typically send money back to maybe relatives or parents back homes or back on the farm?
That's what a lot of the migrant workers would do, yes. They would go to the big cities or to factory cities like in South China and work for several years and then send money back home to support the family.
Well, your new book is about China's urban Christians, and it sort of focuses on what's happening with this massive urbanization, kind of redrawing the landscape in China. Just say a little bit more about, maybe we'll talk about the church in general and then focus particularly on the urban church. What's happening with the Christians in China today?
Well, the urbanization has really redrawn the landscape in many ways in China, and including for the church. And so the church traditionally was a rural movement, very strong in the countryside, where we saw revival and huge church growth taking place. But it was very marginalized as well. And over the last decade or so, as more believers have moved to the cities and as more people in the cities have found Christ, there's emerging a new kind of church in the cities. And that church is more out there in the society. The people in the church tend to be more educated, more cosmopolitan in their outlook. They hold influential positions in the society. And as a result, the church is kind of coming into the light more. It's coming above board, so to speak, and being more of an actor within the urban society.
And is that happening without, I guess, a reprisal or persecution? I mean, that's still an issue that we hear about. Persecution still takes place in some ways, right?
We certainly hear about that a lot. And in certain places of China, yes, the government is actively seeking to counter the influence of Christians. But I think overall, the amazing thing to me is just the amount of Christian activity in the cities that takes place without a lot of interference. Now, most of these believers are meeting in small, unregistered churches, which means they're technically illegal, but they're meeting in relatively small groups, maybe less than 100 people, meeting in an apartment or maybe a rented office space. And by and large, the government has allowed those groups to continue to flourish and not really taken a lot of direct action to shut them down. Where they would take direct action against them would be in two cases. One, they just get too big, and so they're too noticeable and they've got too much influence. Government may ask them to move someplace else or to start meeting in smaller groups. Secondly, would be if they get actively involved in politics, then the government would move against them.
So, are there mega churches in China? Would we see mega churches in China?
There are a few. There's one particular one in Beijing that's become quite well known, and they have the entire floor of an office building. They have a sanctuary that seats 600 people. They have wonderful facilities there, and they'll have several services on a Sunday. Well, the pastor of that church has a very interesting relationship with the local police. He meets them regularly. They know who he is. They know what he's doing. And there's kind of just a tacit understanding there that he doesn't get too big and doesn't get political, and they kind of let him do what he does. Another similar church in Shanghai a number of years ago got up to 1,500 people. And when that happened, the police came in. They tried to get the church to come under the umbrella of the Three Self Movement, which is the official church organization in China. This particular church refused to do that. And the police just said the whole thing was illegal, and they shut it down completely. And that church has since divided up into numerous small groups, which continue to meet all across the city. So the police deal with it in different ways. By and large, the rule is the megachurch model is dangerous, it's risky, and most people would choose to go with smaller churches And then when they get to a certain size, they would divide and start a new church.
Is the Three Self Church still, I mean, is that prospering? I think we've talked, there's been several, the underground church, there's the kind of unregistered, and then the Three Self. Is that, would these churches, are more of them registering with the government, or are they remaining sort of underground, if you will?
Well, the Three Self Church, the official church structure in China, they continue to grow as well. And so you've got congregations in cities across China where the church is going to be full on Sundays. They really, frankly, have a capacity issue because a lot of people are interested in going to church. Most of the unregistered groups their position would be, they'd be okay with registering with the government because they believe the Bible says that they should come under the authority of the government. But they would not want to register with the Three Self Church because they believe that the Three Self actually is not a church. It's a political organization, and they do not feel that biblically that they can come under that structure. So that would be a position of a lot of the unregistered churches in cities today.
Do churches and church leadership, do they feel the need to speak out on political and social issues? I mean, as you said, the government's always concerned about that if they start talking politics. But is that an issue like maybe the religious right was here in the U.S. some years ago?
There's a certain segment that has felt called to do that. And among them would be a number of lawyers who have felt called to take on defending people who were mistreated in society, different groups, including religious groups and ethnic groups. And they've suffered a lot. The government has cracked down on human rights lawyers significantly in the last year. And many of them, including believers, are being detained right now and being sentenced with very severe sentences for their work because the government, the party, had seen them as directly opposing party authority. So believers that have gone down that road are paying a price for doing that. Most pastors in China might sympathize with those kinds of efforts, but they themselves would not feel it's their place in the pulpit or in the church to speak out on those kinds of issues. And so they don't.
We're going to take a break and come back and talk more with Brent Fulton. Brent serves as co-founder and president of China Source and editor of China Source Quarterly. We're getting an update on China. We're going to talk more about his new book, China's Urban Christians. Brent thought maybe it'd be a good idea just to give the website out, though, because the China Source Quarterly is something that is available for people if they want to have a better understanding of what's going on in China.
Sure. Just go to www.chinasource.org, and you can subscribe to our publications there. Also, there would be a link there to get a copy of my new book, China's Urban Christians.
Chinasource.org is the link. Brent's new book is called China's Urban Christians, A Light That Cannot Be Hidden. We'll talk more about the church in China in a few minutes with Brent Fulton, who is the president of China Source and the editor of China Source Quarterly. You're listening to Connecting Faith. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. Great to have you along today as we talk China. And Happy New Year. You are celebrating with the Chinese today. Brent Fulton has joined us today. We've had the opportunity to connect with Brent in the past when we want to get an update on China and particularly about the church in China. Brent and his wife live in Hong Kong. He's been a watcher and observer for many years and is currently co-founder and president of China Source and the editor of China Source Quarterly. You can find out more on the website, chinasource.org. It's written a new book called China's Urban Christians, A Light That Cannot Be Hidden, and we'll talk a bit more about it as we go along. And Brenton, you mentioned in the last segment about churches growing, particularly in the urban areas, because a lot of people are interested in going to church. Say more about that. Why the interest, and is this different than what it's been in years past?
Well, over the past 30 years, China has enjoyed an increasing degree of prosperity, really across the board. But the government, in telling people just to pursue prosperity, has not answered the question of what to believe in. And, you know, for millennia, the Chinese people have had something to believe in, whether it's Buddhism or Confucianism or communism. And today there's just this big question, you know, what do we want to believe in? What do we put our faith in? What's the meaning of life? And so people have been asking those deep questions as they realize that greater material wealth or greater status is not necessarily bringing them happiness. And as a result, many people are very open to looking at Christianity.
The church has grown dramatically for the past four or five decades. How would you sort of assess that growth today? Is it still growing in dramatic numbers, or is it maybe growing deeper, those that are Christians? What's your assessment?
I think it still is growing in terms of numbers. In the 80s and 90s, you saw a lot of growth in the countryside, and it was fueled often by signs and miracles that people experienced, as well as just a family movement where people would be drawn in relationally to the faith and to the church. Today in the cities, you have increased personal freedom to pursue spiritual things, and you have this hunger and this openness. And so I think that's attracting more people to the church.
You know, you start out in your new book, China's Urban Christians, with the premise that the challenges facing China's Christians are more practical than political. So maybe just talk about some of the practical challenges that China's church is facing.
Yeah, well, the premise really comes from the idea that I think a lot of times when we look at the church in China, often the first thing we see is, oh, it's persecuted. And so we assume that the biggest challenge that the church faces is the government. Persecution is a reality, and the government does limit what the church can do often. But yet, I think when we get below that, we realize that there are issues the church is facing today that even if religious policy were to change tomorrow, some of those issues would still be there. And one of the biggest ones that pastors cite today is materialism. As China has prospered, there's no longer the cost associated with being a Christian that there was maybe 20, 30 years ago. It's easier to be a believer, it's easier to come to church, but yet they find that the believers often are pulled away by the desire to make more money. And certainly the society pushes them in that direction. And so pastors find that they're really not prepared to deal with this onslaught of materialism that the church is facing.
Are the pastors trained and equipped in general? I mean, is that one of the issues in terms of leadership? You mentioned so many of these. I mean, there's millions of believers and hardly any mega churches, so there's just multiple small groups. So is training an issue?
It's an ongoing issue. As the church continues to grow, the burden of leadership becomes very heavy, and it's hard for pastors to develop other people to take over leadership. It's not quite as acute as it was maybe 20 or 30 years ago. There have been many, many unofficial seminaries and Bible schools cropping up in China, as well as the somewhat around 20 official seminaries that are run in China. And so there are more and more opportunities for people to get trained in Bible and theology to be prepared for ministry. But it seems like the growth continues to outstrip the supply. And also in the cities, people are just so busy that it's hard to get lay people to take the time to equip themselves and then to assume a role of leadership within the church because everybody's schedule is just so full.
They're working all the time, right?
People work very, very long hours in China, and bosses are, you know, it's common for bosses to try to press people and, you know, get everything they can out of them. And plus, the society is so competitive that people feel, well, if I don't work hard enough, then somebody else is going to get my job or take my position.
And is that a reality for those that don't work hard?
I think China's society is increasingly very competitive, yes.
Are resources available? I think we've talked in the past that, you know, we mentioned about social media, but that the Chinese church is pretty resourceful. online tools as well. So say about where resources are coming from and if publications are allowed.
That's a new opportunity that the Urban Church, I think, has really done well in realizing and making the most of it. But the internet in China, even though it is quite regulated by the government, has proved very fertile ground for the church. And so you've got thousands of church websites up now in China, and you have websites that offer sermons and curriculum of various types. You can order Christian books online in China and have them sent to you. And so all of that has become a huge resource to the church. There are also seminary courses that are available, some produced within China. Others are produced outside China but made available on the web. And for the most part, those are not blocked or regulated. And so there are many more opportunities for people to equip themselves by virtue of the internet.
And these opportunities wouldn't have been there, 10, 15, 20 years ago probably, right?
They would. No, I mean, the World Wide Web, wasn't around 20 years ago. So it's opened up a new vista for the church in terms of equipping people, which has been good.
With, because new opportunities are always new challenges, is issues of maybe doctrine, are those concerns about the solid theology, theological training?
Yes, of course. As you have more material coming through, you could have almost anything. And so people are having to be more vigilant about that. Another issue that's arisen, though, is just in their desire to be theologically correct, some groups are becoming a bit narrow, and so they're wanting to exclude other theological positions that don't line up with their own. And so you're kind of, even on the internet, the Christian internet in China, you're kind of getting different camps now that espouse different theological traditions or emphases. And that can be dangerous. It could be unhelpful in some ways as people begin kind of dividing up into these different theological camps.
Talk about sort of mission opportunities in China, whether, I guess, short or long term. Say a bit about what you'd like someone to maybe know about that or to consider when looking at the opportunities in China.
Well, I think the landscape has certainly changed. The needs of the church in China today are not what they were 20 or 30 years ago. And so I think the important thing is to seek to assist the church on the ground in China, what it's doing. I don't think it's our role to go in necessarily and pioneer new things, but to come alongside and to be an encouragement and to bring things that are going to be useful to them. And so a couple examples would be Christian groups in China often have summer camps where they serve the youth in their community or the children in their community. And sometimes they like foreigners to come in and teach English and be part of those summer camps. Obviously has to be done carefully, but there are opportunities to do that kind of thing. I think another area of interest is the church in China itself increasingly has a burden for missions, a burden to go cross-culturally. But yet there's very few that have experience in doing that. And so perhaps those from outside who have experience in doing cross-cultural mission can take folks from China along with them, whether it's going to a minority group within China or perhaps even going outside China for a mission trip. And I think there are opportunities there to encourage the church but through example and through learning together.
We've talked about the migration within China, but there is a pretty substantial migration out of China as well, right? That there's millions of Chinese working in Africa or Asia or any place else, it seems like.
There certainly is. And China's government right now has a thrust called One Belt, One Road, where the gist of it is to kind of rebuild the Silk Road from China all the way across Central Asia and to the Middle East and Europe, by doing infrastructure projects in the nations all along that route. So China is going to be investing in putting workers in many of those countries. Interestingly, countries that have been very resistant to the gospel and countries where often traditional missionaries can't go. And so some are thinking that this could be an avenue then for believers from China to go and work in these various nations and have a witness as they do that.
Brent Fulton's my guest today. He's co-founder and president of China Source and editor of China Source Quarterly. You can subscribe to that. You can find out more about what's going on in China on a regular basis. If you go to chinasource.org, you can find out about the quarterly and the other resources available, including Brent's new book, China's Urban Christians, A Light That Cannot Be Hidden. We're going to talk a little bit more about the church in China and how we can pray and the other opportunities that we can serve our brothers and sisters in Christ in the moments ahead as we continue here on Connecting Faith. Listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem, talking today with Brent Fulton. Always glad to connect with Brent, who lives in Hong Kong with his wife and has been watching and observing and writing about China for a number of years. He served as the managing director of the Institute for Chinese Studies at Wheaton College back in the late 90s. Before that, he was a founding U.S. director of China Ministries International. And he is now a co-founder and president of China Source and the editor of China Source Quarterly. He's written several books, including co-authored China's Next Generation, New China, New Church, New World. And the latest is China's Urban Christians, A Light That Cannot Be Hidden. Brent, I want to go back a bit. You talked about opportunity to maybe come in and serve the church in China by doing some youth camps. So say a bit about youth in China today, maybe young children and teenagers. I mean, are they similar in interests and desires with any other young adolescent across the globe?
Well, I think they share common aspirations and in some ways a common love for pop culture, which seems to kind of be ubiquitous no matter where you go in the world. But this generation is an interesting one. They're really the first generation that's grown up with no really life-shattering experience in China. And what I mean by that is previous generations have gone through huge political upheaval. For example, the Cultural Revolution back in the 60s and early 70s, or the Tiananmen incident back in the late 80s. And then there was SARS in 2003, and that was a very life-threatening experience. But today's generation has grown up in an era of unprecedented prosperity and opportunity. And so I think they have maybe more an optimistic view of the world than previous generations did. But I think they also, in some ways, they have higher expectations. And if those expectations aren't met, they could end up being a very frustrated generation.
Could Tiananmen happen again, or would it be crushed quicker? Or?
The security apparatus in China has become extremely large. In fact, last year the domestic security budget in China was larger than the military budget, and so it is unlikely that any particular uprising in China would be allowed to continue for any length of time at all. And particularly in Tiananmen Square, which is such a politically sensitive place. If you visit the square now, you will notice that there are police stationed at very frequent intervals throughout the whole area. And anybody who tries to do anything in the square would be immediately ushered away.
You know, with the they talk about the security presence dramatically increased across China, yet the church continues to increase. So there has to be some working relationships, right, with those neighbors and coworkers, and just are you finding that Chinese Christians are able to maybe winsomely live out their faith and have a positive influence on the culture in general?
I think that's very true in China. The Christians do good. The Christians have an ethic that the rest of the nation looks at and says, we don't really understand it, but we appreciate it. The Christians often have family life that other people would envy. And so I think the Christians in many ways are a witness very winsomely to their neighbors. And the government, by and large, I believe, acknowledges, at least tacitly, that the believers are making a good impact on the society. And I think that's one reason why the government is not actively seeking to wipe out the church, because they realize that the Christians, for the most part, are good people, and they're doing good things for the society.
The subtitle of your new book is A Light That Cannot Be Hidden. I mean, there probably have been attempts to hide that light, right? But it's not really possible anymore, is it?
You know, and I think the government has come to grips with that, or they are coming to grips with that. The church, for many decades, was hidden. You literally had to go find it if you wanted to find the believers. I remember my first trip to Beijing over 30 years ago. Literally, you know, went to find a church on Sunday, literally could not find the church. A few years ago, my wife and I were walking down the street in Beijing, and some young people came up to us and said, "Jesus loves you," in Chinese, and thrust tracts into our hands. The church was coming to find us. And I think that's just kind of an illustration of how the church now is much more visible in the society. It's much more out there. And the government is distrustful of any social group that it cannot control, and that would include the church. At the same time, I think they realize that the church has become so widespread, particularly in the cities now, that to try to shut it down would just be futile.
There have been some crosses removed from time to time, though, right? And is that more just based on maybe a local administrator or official in terms of how he might interpret the rules and regulations?
Yes, in the city of Wenzhou, there have been over 1,000 crosses taken off of churches. And that number in and of itself, I think, is significant because it suggests that Wenzhou has a lot of churches, which it does. Wenzhou is probably the most Christian city of any city in China. It has a long history, generations of Christian activity. And the Christians and the local government have had a great relationship now for a couple of decades. And the local government has allowed believers to put up all kinds of huge churches with crosses on top. And everybody's been fine with that. Well, in the last couple of years, the provincial government has stepped in and said, "This is not good. We don't want all these churches everywhere. It's not, you know, sending the right message. After all, we are a communist country," and so they've intervened and forced these churches to take their crosses down. In some cases, actually demolished the church itself. I think the interesting thing about this case, which has gotten so much coverage around the world, is that most of the churches affected are registered churches. They're under the Three Self movement. They're not unregistered house churches.
In recent weeks, however, things have really escalated, and the pastor of the Chongyi Church in Hangzhou, a large city in Zhejiang province, was removed from his pulpit and then subsequently detained. This is actually the largest Chinese church in China, and really, it's the largest Chinese church in the world. And so the fact that this particular pastor has now been removed and is now under detention really suggests that this is bigger than just a provincial power struggle. It seems to follow a pattern, and the pattern is that people in the society who have respect of others within the society and who oppose the government in their views are then targeted by the government and often detained, and then charges are brought against them, and then the media goes to work in giving these people a bad name. We've seen that in the case of human rights lawyers, journalists, business people, and now we're seeing the exact thing play out in the case of this Pastor Gu in Hangzhou.
To be targeting the largest church in China seems like a pretty clear notice of intention, doesn't it?
That's one of the worrying things about this case. Now, Pastor Gu, in his role as not only the head of this particular church, but also the head of the China Christian Council for the province, had spoken up against the cross removals, and had, in his official capacity, written a letter to the government opposing the cross removals. And many believe that that is what sparked the backlash against Pastor Gu. Now, Pastor Gu's church was actually founded by James Hudson Taylor, back in the 1800s, and has now become probably the most visible Christian church in China. And Pastor Gu is somebody who has had good relations with foreign Christians from many different countries. So as a visible leader within the church in China, in a church that is also very visible, this is a very worrying sign.
We're talking with Brent Fulton. Brent has written a new book called China's Urban Christians, A Light That Cannot Be Hidden. And thinking, Brent, just maybe say a word about the book, particularly, I guess, for someone who doesn't know a lot about the church in China. What do you hope they're going to learn from this book?
I hope they see the facets of the church in China, that the persecution story may be part of the story, but it's certainly not the whole story of what God is doing in China. The story itself is quite complex and, I think, quite fascinating. I also hope it puts a face on the church, that they're able to recognize some of the struggles, the personal issues that believers in China face, and thus would be better able to pray for brothers and sisters in China.
Well, say more about what, if there were maybe two or three things where we could specifically or more specifically pray for the church in China, what would you recommend?
Most believers in China, I believe, are not political. They don't seek to oppose their government directly. I think many of them, though, are shocked at what has been happening in Zhejiang province and now more recently what's happened with Pastor Gu. We need to pray that this kind of action does not spread to other cities in China. And I think it's very important to point out that up until now, believers, both in the registered and unregistered churches in many cities across China, have been able to continue meeting and in some cases even expanding their ministry. So we need to pray that this policy that's been enacted in Zhejiang would not spread to other places. We need to pray for government officials, as I believe they are right now sorting out how to deal with the church. We need to pray that the Lord would direct them and give them wisdom.
I think also we talked about leadership, and the leaders of the urban church are often overworked and under-resourced, and so we need to be lifting up those leaders in prayer.
These are dear brothers and sisters in Christ, and they continue to grow in numbers and in their faith, and we can play a big part in supporting what they're doing. Say just a little bit about the China Source, and again, what the kind of resources that we might be able to connect with you about that would help us to be better engaged and better praying for our brothers in China.
Well, that's our goal at China Source, is to provide knowledge resources for the church at large so we can better understand the situation in China and better know how to serve with our brothers and sisters in China. And so we have a number of resources available. We have a weekly news summary that comes out. We have a blog that translates things that Christians in China are writing into English, and so that we can hear directly from brothers and sisters in China. And then we have our quarterly, which deals with a variety of themes, each issue related to the church and ministry in China. We also have some books that can be ordered from our website, and our regular weekly blog, which again deals with a number of themes related to the church and more current issues that the church is facing. So we hope that we can be a resource to those who care about China and who are looking for opportunities to serve.
I encourage you to check it out, chinasource.org, chinasource.org. You can find out about the quarterly and about Brent Fulton's new book, China's Urban Christians. Brent is the co-founder and president of China Source and the editor of China Source Quarterly, joining us today, giving us an update on China. And I'll just say once again, Happy New Year to you. Brent, it's great to talk with you.
Well, likewise. Thank you. Thank you, Neil, for this time.
Brent Fulton joining us today on Connecting Faith. If you missed part of today's program or like to hear it again or pass it on to a friend, you can go to our website, myfaithradio.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. You'll find the podcast archive there.